Welcome back, listeners. My name is Jackson Vickery, and I am the host and producer of the JV Club podcast. On this episode, I spoke to Oscar-nominated production designer Maria Dirkschowitz about her work on Ferrari.
Such an honor to be chatting with someone your esteem, and just the film was absolutely it's pulsing. My gosh, it just didn't let up until the final second. And
oh good, you liked it then.
I did. Yes. No, I'm a sucker for I'm a sucker because I'm not really into sports like in general. But when you attach it with film, and when you attach, I don't know, there's something about an internal family drama set on with cars. And it's something that is, I don't know, it works. And this one worked.
Directed by Michael Mann as well. I mean,
yes, and directed by the legend Michael Mann. My heart, I have terrible anxiety, and that gives me even more at times. But I'm just curious what your familiarity with, Ferrari and Enzo was, and just,
project? I laugh now. There is nobody on the planet less interested in cars than me. I mean, really. And I laugh and I go, how did I land this amazing job, which is called Ferrari? You know, I think the thing is so much more to this piece than, like you said, than just about the car. I actually didn't pretend. I knew there were enough guys involved in this production who adored the Ferrari side of things. So I concentrated just about on everything else. And, you know, when I got the script, obviously to a designer, that's great material. I mean, one of the things I love about my job is that you never know what world you're going to be dipping your toe into next. It's always different. You never know what's coming next. So when I got this script, obviously, Christ, Michael Mann, he's like an early cinematic hero. So when you get the combination of him asking you to do a film about this set in Italy in 1957, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? Quite an amazing subject to dip into. And I kind of am pleased that it wasn't anything I knew about at all, not at all. And I really like that. I like that aspect of my job that, right now I'm coming to the end of a movie. I've no idea what the next one's going to be. I've got no idea what world I'll be digging into and doing research into. And that's sort of one of the pleasures of it. Mm-hmm. It's with Michael in the same way. If you were interviewing the actors, they would talk about how he really needs to dig deep into character. And that's very much the case with the settings as well. In terms of all the racing stuff, he wanted us to be as true as we could possibly be. There's tons of stuff out there. There's a lot of archival photographic material that we could lay our hands onto, and that we could, know exactly what the starting ramp in Brescia looked like. And then there's the other side, which is obviously the personal lives of these characters. Mm. And finding the visual representation of what that is. And again, it's got to be motivated by character. And it's got to be, you're saying so much with somebody's home, you're saying so much about them. And I know that Michael was very keen, number one, to make sure that Ferrari in 1957 isn't the Ferrari of later years. He's not an incredibly wealthy man. His home is quite bourgeois. It's quite sort of, it's pleasant. It's very comfortable, but it's not on some huge elevated level financially. So we had to get that absolutely right. Then there was this whole business of the two homes, the home he shares with his wife, Laura, and then the home he shares with Lina Lardi, the farmhouse, had to feel completely different. You know, the Ferrari house is quite bourgeois. It's quite solid. There's something quite oppressive about it. It's whereas the farmhouse was suffused with light and it was comfortable and she's a modern woman and it was a very different kind of environment. So those were two kind of very key things. And also it was very key, Michael's very specific, which I like to be as well. So, you know, the research, it's not just like it's Italy 1957, it's Modena in 1957. Mm. And there's a very specific aesthetic. Well, first of all, in Italy, you know, each city, you can drive an hour and you're in a completely different place. The colors are different. The architecture is different. The food can even be quite different. Modena, the food is very meaty. It's not what you automatically think of as Italian cooking. And it says a lot about the furniture is different. It's really interesting. And to find that out, but in a hugely accelerated way, because I only had 11 weeks prep. And my set decorator had 10 weeks prep. And because we were a production, we were obviously shooting in Italy, I wasn't able to bring my UK people with me. I was eventually allowed my set decorator, and that's it. And then you're working, and all my the Italians are the best scenics, the best, they're fantastic. And the scenics we had on that film, I've worked with before in Italy. And I've actually, they're my number one choice. I would take them everywhere in the world if I could. Two of them I've taken to Athens, Prague, Oslo, and Budapest already. So it was nice to be working on home turf with them. And so you're doing this sort of crash course in everything Ferrari and getting it done, getting it made, and getting it out there and put in front of camera. And when, you know, I do these conversations like this, I just find it spectacularly amazing that we actually achieved it and that we did it in the time. Yeah. And, you know, and then in Italy in August, when we were shooting, everything closes down. Everyone goes on holiday, shops close. You know, there's no kind of, and so, and Michael likes to keep things open for quite a long time. He wants to have the ability to, you know, suddenly ask. So we were terrified that he'd be asking us for something that we just had no way of laying our hands on. Mm-hmm. So we ended up, we had a huge prop store, and there was one location that we looked at, which was a rather wonderful farm that didn't work for the movie, but I'm very happy we went to see it because some old lady had died and all the furniture was left completely intact, wonderful farmhouse. And we actually asked if we could buy a whole load of furniture. So we had our own sort of prop store in our prop store, because we knew come August, we weren't going to be able to, no, it's not like LA or London with prop houses, that's for sure, yeah. You know, but it's not, it's more than that. Everything is closed. So if we couldn't lay our hands on it quickly, then, you know, we'd have to have egg on our face when, if Michael was to ask for something different or change his mind about something. So it was a pretty challenging process all round, but incredibly satisfying. And really, really great digging into all that visual material, which, you know, as I said, archival material around the races, there's a ton of that stuff. So getting that right was in a way easy, because it's, you know, and the aesthetics of all that car racing, I mean, there's that fantastic red. I mean, what an incredible red those cars are, you know. But then there's all the all the marketing around the race, all the advertising, and having to get that all. We had a fantastic Hungarian and a Serb. This production was so multinational. It was extraordinary. It was actually very, very, very busy in Italy while we were shooting. And a lot of the crew we had to import, but could only import from the EU for various tax reasons and film incentive reasons. So I had my art departments from all over the world. It was extraordinary. I had this Hungarian and Serbian guy who were doing all the sign writing, hand sign writing, and they were just brilliant. They were quicker. we were laughing. We were always saying they're quicker than the printer because the printers were really, really slow. We would say, you know, send it down to the sign writers. They'll be quicker than this bloody print queue on our printers. But yeah, it was a wonderful world, a very vibrant world to try to recreate. It was a lot of fun.
Mm, yeah, and it's very interesting that, I mean, you mentioned the sort of estate sale, because I was just chatting with the production designer and set decorator for the Iron Claw, and they had the exact same experience where they just found an estate sale in Louisiana and just bought up an entire house. So I'm just like, that is, I mean, it's just, you, I don't know, I'm always so fascinated, and this is why I love the podcast and just chatting with so many individuals like you, because finding out the little Easter eggs that you would never expect.
We travel a lot, and you have to find a different solution to a different problem every time. And kind of that's one of the bit that keeps it fresh, keeps it alive. You know, it's kind of amazing to have to problem solve, and you know, you're with a whole new team and you're getting to grips with them, but you've got to keep moving because you really don't have that much time. Also working, you know, that Michael has a lot of people that he's worked with on many productions. Both Eric and I were the new Eric Messerschmidt, the DP, and I were the new newbies. He has an amazing powerhouse of a location manager, a woman called Janice Polly, who's from LA, who's worked with Michael for 30 years. So she was a great person to sort of, you know, there's certain ways that work better than others. And, you know, she was able to sort of steer me negotiating that stuff. And then Michael also had his on-set dresser that came from the States, and an on-set scenic. And I remember thinking, oh my God, why are we bringing a scenic to Italy where the scenics are amazing? But this guy was like no other scenic. Guy called Vinny J, he's from LA. He was amazing. He cared so passionately. He's worked on, I don't know how many, he goes back a long way. So everyone that was part of Michael's sort of team, they were all pretty amazing, you know, and other jobs on the unit. There's a sort of a club of those people who, I don't think he's ever worked with the same designer twice. that was intimidating, should we say. But, you know, working with the people like that scenic, he was just brilliant. I can't tell you. And Eric Lulling, the on-set dresser as well. They're sort of like over and above anyone else. So that was kind of really nice working with those guys. Mm. And, you know, the whole job was certainly challenging, but kind of amazing. Amazing being in Italy, amazing really getting under the skin of that town. We were all living there. You know, it's this small town where Enzo Ferrari lived. I lived, my apartment was one street away from the house that you see in the movie.
Oh, wow.
I had to walk past that house when I went to the local Tesco, you know, to buy my asparagus, whatever I was having for dinner. So when I watched that movie, it's not just watching the movie and all the, but it's like that was the city we lived in for that period of time. Yeah, so my apartment, very nice apartment, one block away from the Ferrari house. And then the barber shop, which you see in the movie, was the barber shop that he actually went to. And even though we had to, you know, bring it back to its face from 1957, they had photographs. And not only they had, and the owner, it's the owner's, I don't know, grandson or something who's running, godson, I'm not quite sure exactly which, who's there now. And he would pull out black and white photographs and show you exactly what it looked like. So, you know, that was, and then he even brought out product. He had some product from that period that we ended up using as props in the movie. And so that whole town, the church that Ferrari went into, it wasn't the church. The church that we shot in wasn't his church because they were doing renovation work. So that was another block in the opposite direction. But there was something rather wonderful about being in that small town. And it totally informs the look of the film, because the town is these extraordinary, everything in that town is terracotta and rust, and it's got this very distinct color palette that absolutely became our color palette for the film. And Michael had said he wanted a basic kind of a monochrome. And we kind of created our own version of monochrome, if that makes sense. You know, you've got the monochrome, then you've got the red, then you've got all that extraordinary stuff with the cars. But for the dramatic pieces, we adhered to a specific palette of colors that was very much something coming from the city that we were in. So that kind of informs the whole aesthetic of the piece. Yeah, it's the bit that I like about my job is discovering the character, discovering the aesthetic, discovering the social level. You know, it works on so many different levels. Mm. And that's it. It's trying to understand what that is, and then how do you express that visually? But like, one of the things that was really important to Michael was the factory. And, you know, there are black and white, lots and lots of black and white images of the Ferrari factory in 1957. And there's this very clean, almost Bauhaus design to it. And his office, incredibly, almost monk-like. It's very, very Spartan. It's lots of clean lines. It's very beautifully proportioned. There's nothing in there. There's nothing on the walls. There's one wall-mounted telephone. There's good furniture. Solid and good, but no embellishment. But it's all very beautifully designed. You know, this is the man whose passion was Ferraris, so that expands into other areas of his life as well. And, you know, I think it was quite important that his home life with Laura was pretty chaotic. So their home was actually fairly messy and not designed in any way. It's a family house that people have lived in for quite a few years. And then the office has this absolute cleanness. And I was just thinking, how are we going to achieve this? Because it's so specific. And we ended up finding a factory that was, I think it was a dairy factory in reality. And one of the things in the images that I really, really liked and felt that would be fabulous to get was that it was on a cobbled courtyard. You had these beautiful clean lines, but the courtyard was cobbled. And we found this place that felt like we could really do something with it. It was completely the wrong period. It was completely the wrong, these black and white images that show this almost kind of Californian, you know, kind of, you know, plastered, rendered finish in this pale color that we figured was kind of buttermilk sort of color with the yellow. We found a description that said the skirting, the base of the plaster work was this yellow color. So what we ended up doing was basically finding a location, building parts of it in their entirety. So the entrance, the gateway into the Ferrari factory is complete set build with his office within that space that's completely, you know, scenery. And then the rest of it was faced. So we took this red brick building and completely covered the front of it. So it just has a face put on it. And we, you know, it's timber and it's plastered and it's painted this nice buttermilk render. But underneath that is the red brick 1960s. So we took out all the windows. Because the proportions of the windows were wrong. So we removed the windows, but we had the window openings. And then we built our windows that were replicas of what was actually in the factory and put those in their place. I mean, people have absolutely no, why would anyone think about that stuff?
No.
But, you know, there's a lot of problem solving that we have to do as well in our job.
Mm.
You know, finding a way of how do we figure this one out? How do we solve this problem? I mean, if you had loads and loads of money and time, you'd build it as a set.
Yeah.
But we didn't have either of those things.
And what do you think Ferrari says just about the cult, like comparing Ferrari now sort of to today? What do you think, I mean, having this film be released sort of says about the it says in the greater cultural conversation about maybe the man Enzo Ferrari.
Oh God, that's interesting, isn't it? I guess he's so much a man of his period. You know, everything about him and how he could be and how he was is an Italian man in 1957. You know, mm-hmm. and that's I find that really interesting. I think I actually found this film personally really refreshing to see. He's not seen through a 2023 lens. He's seen very much like in the same way that it's really important to Michael to get under the kind of do this deep dive into character, and you're not seeing it through any other kind of lens other than the world that he lived in, who he was, how he lived in Modena, how he was seen by his contemporaries. And I like that. I like the fact, you know, that the film, whatever anybody, I really like the fact that it's sort of refreshingly there's no message there. Do you know what I mean? It is, yeah. It's just telling the story. It is telling the story of Enzo Ferrari in this particular moment, period in his life and in the life of Ferrari, really. What did you think about that particular thing? That's an interesting question.
Yeah, no, that is, I mean, that's fascinating to, I don't know, now that you said it, it is very interesting to just, I don't know, it's almost like a portrait on a wall in a sense, where you're kind of just soaking it all in and observing. And now I have to go rewatch it in terms of just seeing it completely through that lens, because you obviously see these giant figures in life, and so it's I don't know, I was thinking of it more from that perspective in terms of the, like, not the power, but the, yeah, maybe it is the power, I don't know. Now you've completely reframed my thought on it, so I need to do a rewatch. But yeah, what you've just said is absolutely fascinating.
Well, you know, I was really interested because, you know, you're very aware that to a younger audience, there's certain things that might seem, you know, the film is set in Northern Italy in 1957. So there's zero diversity, for example. Mm. You know, Laura is a very strong woman, but, you know, the women have a role where they are mistresses and la bella figura and the way they dress and all of that. It's 1957 Italy, you know, and I think it has to be seen as such. And I feel too often now, even with period pieces, there's always a sort of slightly political twist to it. And there's something refreshing about that not being there, if that makes any sense at all.
No, absolutely. Yeah, that makes 100% sense.
Yeah. And it's completely coherent with everything else that we were trying to do, which was, as I said, really digging in, deep diving into the research, making sure that all that race stuff is absolutely accurate, you know? Mm. And being there's no embellishment, there's no fancying it up at all. And, you know, in the same way that one of my absolute pet hates is when you see a movie and it's set in a particular period and everything is there from, you know, this is Italy 1957 and everything is screaming Italy 1957. That's not how people lived. And if you do that business of diving into the character, it would be idiotic to do that. And that's what I find interesting. You know, how would he have lived? What would his house have been furnished in? What would have the colours been that were on the walls? And one of the things that in her bedroom, Laura's bedroom, there's this sort of crazy wall covering, which is like mad ribbons with flowers. And actually, Michael took a photograph. He visited Piero Ferrari and there was this extraordinary wall covering that was in Laura's bedroom when right up until the point she died in the 70s. And he showed me this photograph and said, this is what we need to have on her walls, because this says everything about her state of mind. And that was really interesting. So we ended up kind of replicating it, but not quite, because legally you can't completely copy it. You know what I mean? So we abstracted it, but it had to feel exactly like this photograph he was showing me of what she had on her walls. And that I kind of find that really, that's bold and interesting, I thought. Anyway.
Thank you for tuning into this episode. This podcast was hosted and produced by yours truly, Jackson Vickery. But a very special thank you to Sterling Gavinsky for the theme music and to Carly Haney for the artwork. We will see you next time.